session, and prior to our work session, I'm going to ask that Darren Hill give a staff summary of the grant application request before us. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before you, members of the committee, is a request from the Department of Education to approve submission for a federal grant to the U.S. Department of Agriculture in the amount of $1.3 million for the implementation of direct certification and verification provisions of the Child Nutrition Program and Women, Infants, and Children Reauthorization Act of 2004. It should be pointed out that this is just a request for submission of the grant. The actual grant probably will not be awarded until September of 07. And so we will not be adding limitation today or taking action on limitation. In fact, we will probably be including that somewhere in their budget bill as we proceed forward, since it will not actually be until next biennium.
Thank you. And considering we're still one short of a quorum, does anyone have any immediate questions?
We can still have Heidi come.
Yeah, we can go ahead and do that. Okay. All right. This time I'm going to call up. I'd like to call up Heidi Dupuy, child nutrition specialist from the Department of Education, and also Mr. Sean Range from the DAS Budget and Management Division. Welcome, Senator. So, if you would, Ms. Dupuy, I guess you're going to describe for us the grant application.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Heidi Dupuy, of the Oregon, a child nutrition specialist with the Oregon Department of Education. The grant...
Ms. Dupuy, I'm going to go ahead and open up the work session on the federal grant application request. I apologize for interrupting. Please proceed.
Okay. The grant request that you have before you is to basically improve access to Oregon's children to the National School Lunch and School Breakfast programs.
We need one more senator.
Okay. Let me know who isn't here from the Senate.
It will do three things. First, it will electronically match students with those children receiving food stamps and TANF benefits within the National School Lunch Program. If you are a child already receiving food stamps or TANF, you're automatically eligible for free children or for free meals. And this will facilitate a household not having to fill out an additional application to receive those benefits. The second point is it will add searchability for the eligibility officers in the school districts during the verification process. That's when we ask households for documentation to prove that what they put on their application is true. And the third item is that will allow households to apply for meal benefits over the web.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dupuy. I'd like to ask Mr. Range if he, well, yeah, again, ask Mr. Range if the BAM, if the budget management has a recommendation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sean Range from the Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management, and Budget and Management would recommend approval.
Thank you very much. And now I'm going to go to Mr. Hill for the Legislative Fiscal Office. Do you have a recommendation?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the Legislative Fiscal Office also recommends approving the request.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What are the downstream costs of this grant? In other words, after it's expended, what do we have in place that we need to continue to fund?
Senator Morris, we are currently doing, except for the application for meal benefits on the web, the verification and direct certification are activities that we're currently doing that we had cobbled together working with DHS's legacy databases. And so after the grant, the work would be incorporated just as we're doing now. It's going to streamline the data system so that we're being more efficient. But there won't be any extra costs after the grant.
Follow up? Are we adding personnel?
We are not.
Sounds like a free lunch.
Pun intended.
Why not?
Thank you, Senator Morse. Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, are you ready for a motion?
Representative Morgan, I am ready for a motion.
I would move the LFO recommendation to full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator. I'm sorry. Congratulations. Representative Morgan has moved that the LFO recommendation be approved. Is there any discussion or any objectives? Objections?
Are we missing?
I came in and one went away. I know. I apologize. I did not notice that. So, should we take a little recess here? Or
yes, no, just sit here.
We're just going to sit here for a little bit.
And when he comes in, don't glare at.
Okay.
I'm glad you didn't glare at me because I was the one running late.
Okay.
So, are there any questions or any discussion? Okay. Hearing none. The motion carries, and I'm going to ask our junior member, Representative Edwards, would you carry the bill to the full Ways and Means Committee, Representative Edwards?
I'd be honored, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. All right, I'm going to close the work session on the grant application. Thank you very much, Mr. Dupree, Mr. Range. And now I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 5017, the Oregon Board of Dentistry. I'm going to call up Mr. Patrick Brost. Hope I'm pronouncing your name.
Brost, like bratwurst.
Okay. The Executive Director of the Oregon Board of Dentistry. And Mr. Range. And I'm sorry.
I'm Rodney Nichols. I'm the president of the Oregon Board of Dentistry.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nichols. Welcome. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Bratz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name, for the record, is Patrick Bratz, and I'm the executive director of the Oregon Board of Dentistry. Here with me today is Dr. Nichols, who is our current president of the board. I want to take this opportunity to thank you for allowing us to appear before you today to make a brief presentation and overview of the Board of Dentistry's 2007-2009 Governor's Biennial Budget Recommendation. Before I begin, I want to take this opportunity to publicly thank Sean Range, our budget management analyst from the Department of Administrative Services, and especially Deborah Manthe, the Legislative Fiscal Office analyst. Both of them are very helpful in getting us prepared for this presentation today, so I want to thank them. I'm sure by now you can tell from my voice that I don't sound like I'm born and raised in Oregon. I hail from the state of Wisconsin, and it's my hope that you won't hold that against me or the Board of Dentistry. Ever since I came here, I'm always asked if I'm a duck or a beaver, and I always respond that I'm a badger. And based on the Badgers' basketball season right now, I'm proud to say that. A few years ago, I might not have said that too publicly. I wanted to give just a brief overview of the board. The Oregon Board of Dentistry is actually the second oldest licensing board in the state of Oregon. It was created in 1887. The board is made up currently of 9 members, 6 dentists, 2 dental hygienists, and 1 public member. The board has a staff of 7, which includes myself, along with a number of part-time consultants that we use from time to time on investigations or for examinations. The board's identified goal is to protect the public from unsafe, incompetent, or fraudulent practitioners, encourage licensees to practice safely and competently in the best interest of their patients, and to educate the public on acceptable and appropriate dental practices. I want to talk for just a minute about the actual budget and our key budget drivers. As you are aware, as a member of this committee, the Oregon Board of Dentistry is what's called an other funds agency. We derive the majority of our income, basically almost 90%, from the licensees that we regulate. Our current budget proposal has no policy packages, does not include any fee increases. The board's fees were last raised in July of 1999. Our LFO analyst has recommended some technical adjustments to more closely align align the budget with actual spending patterns, and we're very acceptable to those. Therefore, the budget that you see before you is basically our current budget with the recommended inflationary increases, as well as the increases in services that we purchase from other state agencies and the fees that they charge us. Determining our revenue sometimes can be difficult because the number of newly licensed dentists, dental hygienists, does fluctuate for many reasons. Sometimes it simply can be the timing of the examination that they take as to when they may apply, which may be at the end or the beginning of our biennium. We try to look at the numbers of renewals as well. We try to look at historical trends, and sometimes they do assist us, but it's not a perfect model. The board is a one funding unit, but it does have three major service areas. Licensing and examination. The board currently accepts all clinical licensing examinations given by any state, regional, or national testing agency. This was a change made by the last legislative session. Enforcement and monitoring. During calendar year 2006, the board investigated and closed 288 cases, which resulted in 35 disciplinary actions, which are outlined in more detail on page 2 of 13 of the presentation I gave to you. The OBD has a very good track record of being able to settle the serious cases without having to go to full administrative hearings. Thus, costs and time involved can be much less than if the case had to go to a hearing. However, when the board does take a case to hearing, it does so with the intention of winning, and the licensees know that when the board is successful, it will be looking at recovering its costs. In the administration, the overall administration of the agency is basically left up to the executive director under the direction of the board to see that all the rules, policies, and procedures are implemented. What I'd like to do now is review our performance measures for you. And if you'll turn to our 2006 annual performance progress report, which is on page 5 of the presentation that I prepared for you, I want to review the five measures that are in front of you. The first measure that the board established and was legislatively approved was percent of licensees in compliance with continuing education requirements. We require that dentists and dental hygienists perform a certain number of continuing education hours in a two-year period. We set a 2006 goal of 100%. How we find out about that is we audit 15% of the renewals that come into our office. And in doing that audit for 2006, 100% of them were in compliance with the requirements for their particular profession. Our second performance measure is the average time from receipt of a new complaint to be completed, meaning the investigation is done and it's ready for the board to review that complaint. Our goal in 2006 was 3.75 months. For the period 7/1/2005 to 6/30/2006, our actual time period was 2 months. And if you refer to starting with page 6 and then 7, you'll see the actual graphs that show how we have been progressing. The average number of working days for receipt of a completed paperwork, and that's both issuance of new licenses as well as renewals. We set a goal in 2006 of being approximately 7 days. Our performance was 3.5 days. Performance measure 4 is basically part of the legislative mandate that came out of the last legislature regarding customer service surveys. And there were not any specific targets set for the boards, but the overall satisfaction percent for our period of time was 84%. That means that the surveys we sent out to individuals and they returned, 84% of them gave us a positive rating. We currently survey all new licensees, both dentists and dental hygienists. We survey one-fifth, basically every 5 renewal that we send out for dentists and dental hygienists. We survey every complainant after the complaint has been completed, and we survey every respondent, meaning every dentist or dental hygienist who've been complained against. And you can see the results both in customer service 5, as I call it. Again, there were no mandates, but our timeliness was rated at 84% positive, accuracy 83% positive, helpfulness 82% positive, and our expertise 78% positive, and then the availability of information 79% positive. What I'd like to do at this point is I'd like Dr. Nichols to be able to give you his perspective as a board member about the investigative and the disciplinary process, because it is the biggest part of our job, and it is the board members that we rely on to help us with that activity.
Thank you, Patrick. Mr. Chairman, committee members, for the record, I am Rodney S. Nichols. I am an oral and maxillofacial surgeon. I practice in Milwaukee, Oregon. I held an Oregon dental license for over 25 years. I am completing my first term on the Board of Dentistry and serving as the president of that board. One of the things that the legislature charged or allows the board to do is to hire agents to work on its behalf. And one of my personal philosophies is to hire knowledgeable people. As you can see from speaking from Mr. Bratz's presentation, we have someone good working for us. And we're pleased that we're able to steal him from the Badgers and have him here in the state of Oregon. Now, when I first entered the Board of Dentistry, I thought that the board was a very encumbering, big brotherish type organization. The bottom line is the board, like the legislature, has a very tough job and a minimal budget to do it with and a lot of people to try and please. In fact, if you look at some of our responses in our public survey, the dentists, when they are fined or are disciplined, they're unhappy. The patients, when they don't get what they want, they're unhappy. We figure that we've done our job well because we've got both sides unhappy with us. In point of fact, we had a backlog of cases when Mr. Bratz came to work for us. We now no longer have a backlog of cases. We have shortened our times for investigations. Yeah. We have an excellent investigative staff that includes a dentist and former police investigators, and we have very good licensing specialists. Mr. Bratz has helped the office function well and helped this board function well. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nichols.
I've also included in our presentation as part of your biennial budget processes, there will be a new performance measure that will be mandated upon agencies such as mine, which is the governance best practices. The board is looking forward to that. I've already shared that proposal, which came out of some legislative committees this summer. We're looking forward to implementing that with the start of the next biennium, and I simply shared that in my packet for you to review and see that, you know, we're looking forward to doing that. Let me just conclude by reviewing a few of the major accomplishments and programs that the board has implemented since I became its executive director. The board created a volunteer dentist and dental hygiene program. They did so because we all know that there's an access issue in this state. We sat down one day and said, what role could the Board of Dentistry play in that role to get individuals to be able to provide dental services at either low cost or no cost? And so we created a volunteer dentist dental hygiene program. We sat down with the Oregon Dental Association, with the Dentist Benefits Insurance Company, and said, we all want to bring something to the table so that we can allow these individuals who have reached the pinnacle of their career, still want to be involved, but they don't want to be in day-to-day dentistry. So we created this program, which basically says that those individuals, if they're qualified, meaning they have a license, we will waive their renewal fee. Oregon Dental Association will allow them to attend their various continuing education programs if they are a member of ODA at no fee. And Dentist Benefits Insurance Company will offer them their malpractice coverage at a reduced rate because they obviously are not practicing full-time. To date, we have 8 individuals who have accepted that designation, and we're very proud and very pleased with that. We'd obviously love it to be 18 or 20 or 25, and so that's why every time we send a packet out of information to our licensees, we let them know about that program. The board created a confidential volunteer diversion program approximately 2 years ago for those individuals who have a problem with drugs or alcohol. Instead of formally disciplining these individuals, we've developed a confidential program where they can get treatment, they can be monitored. The board is aware of the fact that the program exists, but they are not aware of the actual individuals. There is someone on my staff that monitors that and keeps track of it. He likes to always mention there's a list somewhere in case he gets hit by a bus, so somebody else can pick it up. But the board does not know who these individuals are. They sign off on the program. They sign off on the people being in there, but they don't know exactly who they are. And so far to date, we have, 8 people in there, and since the program has started, not one of them have, if you want to use the phrase, fallen off the wagon, so that they had to be removed from the program and then had formal discipline placed against them. One of the things I started was an outreach program. We, right now, at least 10 times a year, go out to the licensees, and we're willing to do it to the public as well, to present what the board does, how we do it, why we do it, what are some of the issues. We've had a tremendous response regarding this. We think it has helped in regarding complaints. We make it very clear to people that they can talk
to their dentist before they actually pick up the phone and call the Board of Dentistry with a complaint to see if they can resolve it at that level. And in August of this year, we rolled out a new licensee lookup system. This is a system where you can go online to our website, you can query your dentist, you can find out whether or not he or she has ever been disciplined by the Board of Dentistry, and if they have, that disciplinary order is right there for you to read and review. We have a definition page that explains some of the definitions, and if you still don't understand, you're welcome to call or email us, and we can walk you through that process. It has eliminated virtually telephone calls to our office querying about individuals. We'll get queries after they've been on the system, but the insurance companies, the third-party payers, the hospitals, the clinics have just loved the system. I want to conclude by saying that when I arrived in Oregon, I consider the Board of Dentistry to have been doing a very good job carrying out its primary mission of protection of the public. Over the last 3+ years, I've worked with the board to make the process even more effective and efficient. I think we've done a good job, and there's always more work to be done and always more refinements to the process. I want to thank the committee for their time and attention, and I'm open to any questions as well as I'm sure Dr. Nichols is.
Thank you very much, Mr. Frost and Dr. Nichols. Greatly appreciate it. Are there any questions? Senator Walker.
Thank you. I just have one question, Mr. Brotz. You were talking about the system, the complaint system, or at least the order of complaint. You can look it up on the web. Does it also record the complaints that were dismissed, or is it just orders that have been adjudicated, basically?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Walker, it is only the formal disciplinary action,
okay,
because Oregon law prevents us from talking about complaints that did not result in discipline. So, for example, if your dentist, we hope this isn't the case, had 10 or 11 complaints filed against him or her, that would not be there. What would be there is the formal disciplinary action that the board may have taken against that individual. And I think, as you well know, that sometimes there are frivolous complaints. Someone doesn't like how someone got talked to that day. We have to open that complaint and investigate it. We will very likely close it, but that information is not there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Deb?
I have a very broad question, actually. You are regulating dentists. How have the challenges changed in terms of someone becoming a dentist, in the sense of what are you seeing? I was surprised. About a couple years back, I changed dentists because the dentist I'd been going to for several years had decided to only keep his practice actually in Vancouver and to close his practice here. And I just recently had to change dentists again because of a change in insurance. I, for the first time, had a very young dentist. I mean, very young. I mean, Senator Deckard was much older than my dentist. But he described to me, actually, in some detail, what it costs to actually become a practicing dentist. Now, I'm not talking about school. I'm talking to open an office. Are we seeing difficulties, I mean, in terms of what are the challenges in the profession? Because one of the questions we're not being asked this session, but we will be asked next session, is probably the expansion of the Oregon Dental School. And I just was wondering what you see the challenges in the profession.
Mr. Chairman, I think I'd like to ask Dr. Nichols to give a little perspective of being a practicing dentist, and obviously has a lot of colleagues, and I think he can answer that, and I can then chime in from our perspective.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Devlin, the road to becoming a dentist is difficult. It's time fraught. It is expensive to open an office. I recently looked at opening an auxiliary office and decided it was not financially worth it to do so. It's very expensive. We do have a younger group of dentists, and we may be facing a pending manpower shortage because all of the baby boomers of my era are beginning to practice a bit less and are considering retiring. So there are definitely some considerations. It would be very sad for us to, A, lose the dental school from the state of Oregon.
That's not in question. The question is expanding.
It would be sad to lose it, and it would be worthwhile to expand it. When we look at dental schools across the country, we are closing more than we are opening. Therefore, an expansion for the people of the state of Oregon would be a reasonable and appropriate thing to consider. Did I answer your question, Senator?
Mr.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Devlin, from our perspective and seeing the licensing applications that come in, yes, you are correct, and having been that I finally reached the ripe age of 45, when I look at some of these pictures and I say, wow, is that person really old enough to be a dentist? There is a younger generation, but we are seeing a lot of individuals come in. We do hear when we talk to the students, it is very expensive to open the practice, not just the educational aspect. One of the other issues that I think, as you say, in a future session of the legislature considering expansion of the dental school, is one of the things you have to look at is there are a number of graduates that are coming out who are not going to work full-time. And that is an issue that I think you have to address. We found that out a number of times when we've interviewed or gone out in investigations and find out that individuals, it might be a husband or wife team, husband or wife, and they're only working part-time, that they're not in full-time practice, and yet there was a full-time practice slot for them as they graduated from school.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, the young man, I hate this. At my age, I'm starting to call people that are in their 30s young men. was very competent. So his youth had nothing to do with his competence. So.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. Perhaps dentists age particularly well.
Yeah,
maybe he was actually. Are there any other questions or comments for the gentleman? Okay, very good. Well, Mr. Bras, sorry.
Bratz. Just like a Bratz.
Like Bratzworth. All right. Dr. Nichols, that was easy. On behalf of the committee, I wanted to thank you for your service.
Thank you.
In your position. And thank you for coming today, both of you. And look forward to seeing both of you in the not too distant future.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, now I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5017. And before we go to our work session, Ms. Mant is going to, are you going to describe all four of the bill or just kind of an overview?
I thought I'd, Mr. Chair, I thought I would just kind of briefly go over the paperwork I have in front of you for the two budgets or the two agencies that we're going to work. Because each analyst is probably going to bring in a different packet depending on the type of agency they have and the decisions that are before you. Most of the agencies I'm going to bring to you are really small, and so I'm going to go through the entire budget, and then there'll be a motion, hopefully, to either approve the recommendation or make another one, as opposed to a motion on each package or each decision unit. So that'll be one of the changes. So for the two agencies we have before us, they're actually both a fee bill and a budget bill. The fee bill is relatively straightforward. In your packet, you have a memo from me, and when we get into work session, I'll go through that. And again, at the end, when I make my recommendation, hopefully the chair will get a motion again to either move the LFO recommendation, or you'll make one of your own, and then move the bill out to full committee. In the budget bill, there's actually three documents that are clipped together. And if you wanted to look at clinical social workers as an example, on top you'll have a memo from me, and it looks like this. Attached to that is what we call our work session report. It's a little harder to read. Both documents have the same information. I guess I should say it's harder for me to read. but I'll walk through that when we get to clinical social workers and explain how the report is laid out. And then you'll have a key performance measure summary. And this summarizes the performance measures that the agency proposed to you as well as their targets. And when we go through the budget, we'll do the budget first, and then let there be a motion to either approve or not the LFO recommendation, and then we'd move on to the performance measures, and then you would approve those separately and then move the whole bill. So, and if at any time, obviously, if this doesn't make sense or I'm going too fast, just give a holler and I'll back up. So if you'd like to open a work session, we'll give this a shot.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Matthew. All right, first I'd like to open the work session on House Bill 5010, State Board of Clinical Social Workers, the fee bill. And going to ask Deborah for LFO recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House Bill 5010 is the fee bill for the the Board of Clinical Social Workers. When the agency presented their budget last session, as part of their budget proposal, we knew that they were going to have to increase fees administratively to fund it. What this bill does is ratify those fees that they increased administratively. I've listed the fee increases for you in the table. The increases are expected to generate approximately $80,900, and the revenue is needed to fund their current budget and maintain an adequate ending balance, or I should say fund the 0709 budget. There are some needed amendments to the bill, however, and I've listed that for you. The bill currently includes fee increases that they're proposing to make next biennium, and this bill should only include those that they've already made. And so that's what those amendments there indicate. So, Mr. Chair and members, the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends that you approve House Bill 5010 with the amendments and send it out to full committee.
Thank you very much. Are there any comments or questions on the LFO recommendation? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask the question this time because I want to make certain I understand the way in which these things are staged, because it's the first time I've actually looked at one of these bills. On the recommended amendments on the memo, it indicates that you want to delete line one. When I look at the bill, line one seems to be a bill for an act. Can you help me understand that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, you're actually correct because I look at that. What I meant is under section, it's actually line eight I'm going to delete.
Line eight.
The application fee was actually ratified last session, and thank you for pointing that out. I will fix the line references.
I see. So we delete line eight. The other lines, I think, make sense.
Thank you, sir.
And if I understood what you said, what you're telling us is that the new numbers will, in effect, be an approval of changes that they've already made administratively, and that the changes that they want for another biennium will come at another time.
Yes, sir. They will bring those back to next session for ratification.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, thank you, Representative Barnhart. Any other questions?
Are you ready for a motion?
Yes, I am ready for a motion.
I would make a motion that we amend the LFO recommendation so that the amendment reads Section 1, Line 8, delete, and the rest of the amendment echoes the language in the LFO recommendation, that we move that into the bill and that we move the bill to full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Morgan has moved that we pass the bill with amendment.
Amend
the bill as per the LFO recommendation.
Correct.
Discussion. Are there any objections to the motion? Okay. The motion carries. And I've been instructed that we need three carriers for this bill. So apparently, we need one senator to carry to the Senate, one representative to carry to the House, mm-hmm. and then we'll have one of those two carry to the full committee. Okay. That's what I've been instructed.
Yeah.
This is correct. Okay.
It
all right.
The same one carrying it to.
Yeah.
Pardon me. It could be this. One of those two could be the same one carrying it.
Yes.
We might want to wait until we move the budget and then assign the carriers to both of the bills.
They're carrying it to the pool.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense.
The experienced Ways and Means member, Representative Morgan, has informed me that perhaps we can wait till we act on the budget bill, and at that time, or after that time, we will the carriers. So, having said that, I will now open a work session on House Bill 5009, the budget for the clinical social workers. And Deborah?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House Bill 5009 is the budget bill for the State Board of Clinical Social Workers. Again, you have the memo and the work session report. Just briefly, I'll go over the work session report. It details for you the elements of the governor's printed budget, that top box. Across the top are the fund types. Obviously, in this agency, we just have other funds. But it starts with the legislatively approved budget. And for those of you with eagle eyes, a note that that approved budget is different than the approved budget in my memo. It's because in LFO, we use the most current approved budget. The number in the work session report is out of the orbit system, and that only includes emergency board actions through April. So that's why there's a difference there. The packages you see after base adjustments are the traditional statewide adjustments that you're going to see in every budget, where it adds inflation, and that's an already agreed to amount. Every agency uses the same. It's technical adjustments to get the approved budget up to what we call the essential budget level. And then followed by the policy packages. In the memo, I'll walk you through three pieces. We really don't look at the essential budget level and make a recommendation on that. If there are changes that were needed, for example, to the EBL, you'll see it in a LFO adjustment. So we're just going to move right into policy packages, which is the first number on my memo. DRB policy package recommendations. Package number one ratifies the fee increases that you just approved in House Bill 5010. In other words, this is the package the agency uses to get this into the budget system. It's a revenue-only package, and it requires approval of House Bill 5010. LFO recommends approval. Package 102 is their request for an additional administrative staff. You heard the agency talk about their needs in terms of increased workload and their continued reliance on temporary staff. The LFO recommends approval of this package. However, I do have two recommended reductions. One is to reduce the flexible benefit budget by $11,424. This is in recognition that this is a technical fix in that the budget system generates a full-time flexible benefit. This is the insurance, is medical and dental insurance. It'll generate a full-time benefit when, in fact, the agency will only pay a half-time. And so this is just truing up that budget. So I'll reduce the package by that amount. Also, in recognition that the agency has been relying on temporary services to get this work done, I'm also recommending a reduction of $8,000 in their professional services budget. And I just want to be clear, this doesn't eliminate all of the agency's flexibility, but I thought since this position is going to be doing the work they had been paying a temporary to do, that it seemed like there should be some reduction in recognition of that. So that makes this total package $30,319 of other funds, one position, 0.05 FTE. That's the LFO recommendation. Package 103 is board member training, and you heard Mr. Langenwalter talk about yesterday how important it was for board members to go to national conferences, particularly those designated for training board members to be more effective. They had originally requested $8,000 in this package, which is a pretty big increase for their budget. Working with Mr. Langenwalter and Sean Range of Budget and Management, we agreed to change this package to split it between in-state travel and out-of-state travel. Part of the reason for the adjustment, in analyzing their expenditures, it was pretty clear that their in-state travel budget was understated and their expenditures were a lot higher. And so this gave us the ability to true that up, while at the same time giving them a little bump in their out-of-state travel budget to allow more board members to travel. So again, the recommendation is to approve the increase, but not all of it to go to out-of-state travel, to split between the two. Packages, you see, packages 106, 107, and 108 I've lumped together. These are revenue, again, revenue-only packages. There are no expenditure limitations associated with these. The agency talked yesterday about trying to make the licensing process more efficient, and when they got into their birth month renewal, they realized that their fees were awkward for their licensees. In other words, they weren't easily divisible by 12. The initial license fee amount didn't match the renewal license fee amount. And so, in a sense, this is housekeeping, if you will. It does generate some more revenue, but you'll notice from the table that I've included, most of the revenue is generated from the smallest change, adding a $6 increase to the licensed clinical social worker renewal, annual renewal. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval. The next section, Section 2, are the Legislative Fiscal Office adjustments that aren't related to a policy package. And I've included these just to keep them in front of you. You will see these things from other in other agencies. Package 801 is called Statewide Adjustments, and this is where we would adjust budgets for things like a reduction in PERS, a reduction in the AG rate. These are things that will affect every agency. We just don't know what they are yet for this particular agency, so I don't have any, but wanted to let you know that when we do, we'll catch them up in an omnibus bill at the end. 802 is the package that we're tracking the Ways and Means Co-Chair's 2% reprioritization reduction, and I hope I don't have to say that too many times. And as you see, our recommended reductions also are already at 2.9%. The LFO recommendation was that we'd not reduce this agency further. Then I have 806 is my technical adjustment package, and I think the agency referred to that in their presentation. By looking at their spending, I'm suggesting that these line item adjustments be made so that their budgets at a line item level are trued up. That way it's a little more meaningful for them as they go through the management process. So, Mr. Chair, members, that sums up the policy package recommendations and the LFO adjustments. Where that leaves us is that the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends an other funds budget of $661,223, 4 positions, 3 FTE, and that House Bill 5009 be amended accordingly.
Thank you, Deborah. Any discussion? Senator Starr.
Thank you very much. I know we do things this way, but it seems interesting to me that we've passed their fee bill that basically ratifies the fee that they did administratively last biennium. Now we're going to pass their budget that includes a fee increase in it, and that will come back and I guess we ratify in the next session. So in essence, we're voting for this bill if we vote for it. In essence, aren't we ratifying the fee this session? I mean, even though we're going to come back and again say it's okay next session?
Mr. Chair?
I was going to say, Deborah, do you want to answer that one?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, members, since the agency has the authority to administratively increase fees, since they haven't actually done it, they're not ratifying those increases. And it could turn out that when they get into actual practice, that maybe they decide they're not going to increase the fee, so you wouldn't want to ratify a fee increase that hasn't been through the complete process.
So, Mr. Chair, we're voting for this. We're not saying necessarily, we're not voting for an increased fee, even though the budget is based on a fee's going up.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Senator Starr.
I like this. Can you answer all the questions that people ask me that are difficult?
I'm sorry, would you...
No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead, Deborah.
I understand what you're saying.
I'm curious. I'm not saying I recommend we change it or anything, but it's just, to me, it's interesting that
I think
this is the process.
That some part of it is also a disclosure and that the agency's coming forward and identifying that they think that there's going to be a need to do something in the future, and they have the ability to set that administratively, so they're saying, this is what I want to do. Clearly, you could say, no, we don't want you to do that, and my guess is they would take that under advisement and not do it and wouldn't bring it back. So they're really giving you a heads up that we think this is an important thing to do, and you actually get two shots at it. If you think about it, they could do it, and then next time you could decide, well, no. And as you look at their budget, you might think their imbalance is too high and not ratify those fees.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Jensen, could you
thank you.
Comment or question?
Question, I think, for staff.
Can you enlighten me a little more on the flexible benefits of $11,424?
I'd love to.
Okay.
In the budget system, ORBITS, we affectionately call it, see, the agency doesn't calculate the personal services budget. It's calculated by the system. And one of the quirks, if you will, of the system is that if you have an FTE, a position that's 0.5 FTE or greater, the system will generate a full-time flex benefit, which is like $22,800. It's $900 and some a month, as opposed to saying this is only a half-time position and therefore they're only eligible for a half-time benefit. From a statewide perspective, it makes sense in that the halves balance out, because if you're less than a 0.5 FTE, agencies get no budget for flex benefits. So you can understand from a statewide perspective, it probably balances out. But when you have small agencies, it doesn't necessarily balance out. And so I'm just making the adjustment because the agency won't need that much budget to pay the flex benefit. The adjustment really doesn't hurt the agency.
Well, I'm not following your arithmetic as you're explaining it.
Okay.
You're talking $900 a month, and that would be about $10,800.
For 24 months?
For 24, it would be $20,100. Okay, that's right. We're always on a buy-in. We don't work on an annual, but
24.
That's right. Okay.
And I apologize. I didn't bring all the detail in front of me. I'd be more than happy to send you a detailed worksheet.
That's fine. I can deal with the biennial.
Excellent.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. Are you making a comment on the pilot session? Did you vote against that?
No.
Oh, all right. I'm just
fine. Can I get a quote?
Senator Devlin.
In factoring this in for 24 months and the fact that a half FTE equals a full-time FTE in the system, do you also factor in what the benefits would be for a normal half-time FTE in the system? Because there are benefits that would be available to that individual. Maybe not the full range of benefits as a full, but you factor in what the benefits would be for a half-time FTE.
Yes, and that's what I've left them, Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where does this land rebalance? If these are approximate numbers, there has to be a rebalance somewhere along the line.
Senator Morris, I think the approximate number is me telling you exactly, well, would you try your question one more time, please?
We can pick this up at a later time, Mr. Chair. But my question was, if these individual budgets are not number specific, but they're factors in the formula, there must be a rebalance somewhere when you roll up all of these budgets.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, I think that, one, there's probably not a lot of true part-time positions in the state. I don't know for sure. And so it would be relatively small. But you're exactly right. If I was an agency and I had four part-time positions, 0.5 FTE, the budget system would actually generate more personal services dollars than I needed. And by that half amount of the flex benefit budget.
Or if you want to this out, it'd be good to correct that.
Which is why, in my budget for these, I'm taking that out.
Okay, thank you. Other questions or comments?
No? Mr. Chairman.
Senator Devlin,
are you ready for a motion, Mr. Chairman?
I am ready for, well, I'm actually not ready for a motion. I'm going to ask you a question. We also have to talk about the performance measures. So my question is in terms of what's the best way to do this. I'll go ahead and take a motion on the budget, see what happens, and then come back.
That was encouraging. Yes.
Well, I'm trying to be fair here.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Do that and then come back and you'll talk a bit about the performance measures,
right,
and then we'll go.
Okay. Then we'll have a second motion, and then we'll have a final motion to move the whole thing.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. I appreciate your indulgence. So now, Senator Devlin, I'm ready for a motion on.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move all the LFO recommendations relative to House Bill 5009, the State Board of Clinical Social Workers.
Thank you. Senator Devlin moves all of the LFO amendments on House Bill 5009, the State Board of Clinical Social Workers. Discussion. Are there any objections? Okay. Motion passes. Now, Deborah, you will discuss the performance measures.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You.
Members, the last piece in your packet is a one-page summary, and it's at the top. It says legislatively adopted 2007-09 key performance measures. This summarizes the four performance measures that they presented to you yesterday, along with the targets for 08 and 09. I've also added the board best practices measure, which, again, I think I sent some information to your offices at the beginning of session about this particular measure, and it'll be included in virtually every budget that I bring to you here. It was approved by JLAC last year or this year, but you'll see it in every board budget. I'm not proposing any recommendations to change, so my recommendation would be to approve their proposed measures as well as the inclusion of the board best practices. If there are any adjustments you'd like to see to the targets or to the measures, I can incorporate those into the final report that goes to full.
Thank you, Deborah. Any discussion on the LFO recommendation?
Motion,
I would like a motion.
I move the LFO recommendation to the performance measures.
Representative Morgan moves LFO recommendation to the performance measures. Discussion? Are there any objections? Okay. Motion carries.
Chair, just as a matter of question,
yes, Representative Jensen.
I am correct that we have amended the original bill for the total amount. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes. You are exactly correct.
So now I just need a motion to move the bill to the floor.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Devlin makes a motion to move the bill to the full committee.
With a due pass recommendation.
With a due pass recommendation. Thank you very much. Discussion? Mm-hmm. Any objections? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Devlin. Now we need carriers. And Senator Devlin, after that discussion about the young dentist.
Yeah. And Senator Deckard wasn't even here for that discussion. That's probably good.
He's not here. He's still not here. Well, Senator, yeah, that's right. Senator Devlin, would you carry this bill to the Senate?
Yes, I would.
Thank you very much. And Representative Edwards, would you carry this bill to the House?
Yes, I will.
And Senator Devlin, would you also carry this to the full committee?
Yes, I will.
Well, thank you very much.
Perfect.
And you can sign the fee bill also.
So I carry both the budget?
Oh, yes. For clarification, both.
I don't have to start all over, correct? All right.
For clarification, both the fee bill and the budget bill will be carried. So we have Senator Devlin to the full Ways and Means in the Senate, and we have Representative Edwards to the House. I thank you very much for that work. Now, I'd like to continue in the work session. Now move to the gavel again.
I think you have to turn the work session on.
I'm sorry. Am I really? Ramona was saying hit the gavel quite hard.
Well, that's a little
hard. Okay. I've been working out a lot.
Good for you.
Now, do I need to close the work session on those two bills?
Just on the one bill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm not sure that I did. I don't think I did. So, closing the work session on House Bills 5010 and 5009, and I'm opening a work session on House Bill 5008 and 5007, and Deborah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House Bill 5008 is the fee bill for the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners. Similar to the one that we saw before, this fee bill is ratifying a fee. In this case, it's the fingerprinting fee that the agency established administratively this biennium. Again, the agency talked about establishing this fee in their budget last time. The bill is perfect as is, and therefore I have no recommended amendments. Legislative Fiscal Office recommends your approval.
Mr. Chair. Senator Starr.
Are we in work session?
Yes.
I move House Bill 5008 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Starr moves that we move House Bill 5008. Is there any discussion? Any objections? All right, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'm going to move right on to House Bill 5007 then. It is the budget bill for the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners. Again, I'm going to work mainly off the memo, but if you have any questions on the work session report, I'd be glad to answer them. Board of Chiropractic Examiners had two policy packages. The first one, again, is the fee ratification package. It's a revenue-only package. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval. It's tied to House Bill 5008, which you just passed out to pass. Package 101 is titled Contested Case Hearings. It requested $59,960 increase in other funds, primarily to build in flexibility to the agency's budget for a potential increase in contested case hearings. Mr. McTeague mentioned yesterday, in working with Mr. McTeague and BAM, we have some proposed modifications to the request to true up other line items in analyzing the agency's budget. Some of the flexibility that they had on those line items were being used to subsidize overages, and so we took this opportunity with this package to true those up and still incorporate some flexibility into the budget so that they could respond to an increase in potentially contested case hearings. Given the fact that it's very difficult to anticipate when you might have a contested case hearing, how much an individual one might cost, I think it's a good idea, especially since they have sufficient revenue, to have some flexibility for them. I also think it's important, though, that the agency checks in on that flexibility or that reserve next time to make sure that those dollars aren't finding themselves going to other line items. And I think Mr. McTeague committed to that in his testimony yesterday. If they didn't need these dollars, they wouldn't spend them. So I've listed there for you the suggested alignments, and again, that both the agency and budget and management have agreed to these changes. Doesn't change the total amount of the package, however. Package 103, and I guess I lied to you right off the gate. There's actually three policy packages. Merchant fees is a small package, $2,000. LFO recommends approval of the package. I think this has just grown over time. They accept credit cards for their payments, and there's a cost for the agency to accept those credit cards, and I think it makes sense that they start budgeting for that cost. So we recommend approval. Legislative Fiscal Office adjustments, again, we don't know what state rev reductions might be, therefore there aren't any incorporated into this budget, but we will catch them later. And package 802, this agency was approved for the expedited hearing process, and therefore they're not subject to this reduction. After all that, the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends another funds budget of $1,125,027 in five positions, 4.50 FTE. Since this is no change from the governor's recommended budget, there are no amendments to the bill needed.
Are there any questions or comments on the LFO recommendation?
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions, and I think this first one maybe relates to an issue that Representative Jensen was raising with the last budget in terms of other payroll expenses. I would just point out that notwithstanding the variables in the flexible benefits, we're looking at 55% OPE in this budget. And as we relate public employment to private employment, that disparity continues to grow in terms of other payroll expenses. These are not normal in the private sector. And I would just point that out. The question that I have deals with ending fund balances. This ending fund balance is more than, has increased more than 100%. And I noticed in the previous testimony from the Board of Dentistry, looking just quickly at their documents, we're drawing down their ending fund balance. And I'm wondering, what is the appropriate target that we're shooting for as a percent of revenues for an ending fund balance? This one is up over 30%. If you can shed some light on that, maybe the direction we're going.
Again, Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, there is no percentage per se that we shoot for. Some of it depends on the agency's renewal cycle, and some part of the ending balance is used for cash flow purposes. In other words, some agencies bring all their money in at a certain time, and an ending balance helps cushion those variations so that they can continue their operations. This agency has moved to birth month renewal, and so that has even that particular cycle out. I did a quick comparison in anticipation that someone else is...
You saw me coloring in my book last
night. Actually, I did. And it's very helpful when you have a little heads up about that. I don't know how many more I need that. But this is actually for both agencies that we were working in. Chiropractic examiners is on the bottom. And what I tried to show you is the total amount of revenue coming in each biennium compared to their expenditures. And as you can see, back in 1997-99, their expenditures were higher than their revenue. And so they were relying on having an ending cash balance to survive. And then that kept increasing. And our 103... that changed, because I don't think that's a good position to be in if your revenue isn't even covering your expenditures. I mean, an ending balance in and of itself is not a bad thing. But of course, you won't want it too high. Your only other options would be to reduce fees or increase expenditures. But this kind of shows that other than, and I think in the 07-05, and that's biennium to date, some part of the transition to birth month renewal gives you a false sense of, I have more revenue. And I think we need to let the agency go a little bit longer with their birth month renewal, but I think perhaps it's something to look at next time when they come in and we see what kind of ending balance that they have. And since there is though a cost, another part of the element trying to decide what you do about that is there is a cost to changing fees. And we wouldn't, I think if you look at clinical social workers above it, they got caught in that trap as we tried to manage too low an ending balance for them. And then once it catches up to you, you start to go negative, and they actually then had to increase fees. This would be like second or third biennium in a row just to make up for the fact that we tried to drive them down too low. So it does require some more thought, and I think that if we give them a little bit more time in this interim, that the agency can come back next time with a recommendation on whether their fees are too high or whether or not we need to let it ride a little bit longer.
If I might editorialize, if you'll indulge me, we will be passing other fund budgets with substantial reserves contained within each budget. But yet we persist in funding the most critical services, education, public safety, and human services, without a reserve base. And that inconsistency, I hope, is not lost on this body.
Thank you, Senator Morse. Further discussion or questions, Representative Kleinhardt.
That was simply a comment, I think, on the issue that we're dealing with here. I'm familiar with a couple of these agency budgets, not these two in particular, but it appears to me that this is primarily a convenient way of establishing a
fee increase schedule that's much longer than a single biennium. So that if you set the thing up appropriately early in the fee cycle, you save reserves because your fee is collecting more money than you need. In the middle of the fee cycle, you spend approximately what you bring in, and at the end of the fee cycle, you're spending part of those reserves in order to meet your budgetary needs. And then the next fee increase comes, and the cycle begins again. I think that's all it means. I don't think it means anything more than that. And different agencies, of course, are at different places on this cycle.
And their cycles are different, right?
Yes, thank you. May I also comment on the comment? And that is, I agree with you that we should be thinking about the inconsistency, but not to the detriment of these agencies.
Mr. Chair, if I may respond, I was not raising the issue of the size of this ending fund balance. Okay, I was just trying to contrast.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Morris. Representative Jensen.
Yes, and ending fund balances have attracted in the Ways and Means Subcommittee's today significant amount of discussion. Having had this discussion in an earlier committee, I think we need to pursue it a little bit further. And my question to start with is, what was the process with which we came to reducing this ending fund balance? Was this something that LFO really was initiating in, or was this something that came from the governor's office as it came down to legislative fiscal?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, the agency I was referring to that where they came down was Board of Clinical Social Workers, and if memory serves, it came from a conversation from you all about that they're ending balance, and this was several years ago. I wasn't here, but it was the ending balance they felt at the time was too high, and so the agency was directed to reduce fees, and they did so administratively, and those fees ran at a reduced rate for a biennium or two. They increased them back to the reduced level and then increased them again. But to your question, it can also come from the executive branch. It could come from the agency, and they could look at it and say, we think their ending balance is too high. I think you're going to see one in the subcommittee where the agency recognizes that their fees are too high, and they're going to talk to you about their plan to reduce fees next biennium. So it could come from any place.
Well, they...
Representative Jensen?
If I can follow on this a little bit, and I'm not sure exactly, and I'm not picking on this agency with it, but just as a matter of, you know, looking at it. Sometimes we look at these budgets and see that there are other fund budgets, and don't take the same sort of perhaps microscopic look at them in the same way we do if it's general fund budgets. While I can't and don't want to talk about this agency, I don't know whether this is where this other fund budget comes from, whether it's all fees or whether there are any assessments. In the cases where it's not fees but is instead coming out of some type of assessments or, you know, from the agency, then somewhere when we trace these things back, we run into the fact that we're talking about general funds. And it is that particular portion that has sparked my curiosity recently as to if we run these numbers back through their various and sundry points of origin where we run into general funds, then the ending fund balances take on a little bit different light for me.
An example is the Department of Administrative Services. They assess agencies, and agencies pay them with general fund, federal fund, but it's other funds, Department of Administrative Services. And is that the point that you're making?
Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And given, Mr. Chairman, your indulgence, given Representative Jensen's assignment, I would hope he would look even closer into that issue and the impact of DASH charges on agencies. The one thing I would want to comment on here, though, on licensing agencies, although you would have the normal routine costs, almost any of these are subject to contested cases that sometimes can be very expensive, particularly if they start getting up AG charges. And while it may look just normal like this, you'll hit a blip, and sorry, Mr. McTeague, the chiropractors have had a pretty big blip some years ago. The charges can be pretty substantial. So sometimes it's reasonably prudent, just like us in a recession, some remorse, for them to have a fairly good reserve.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. Further discussion? Okay. Do I have a motion on the... Senator Morse?
No, okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have moved the LFO recommendations to House Bill 5007 and move the bill to forward with the DPAS recommendation.
Representative Morgan moves the LFO recommendation and on House Bill 5007 and with a DPAS recommendation to the full Ways and Means. Discussion? Any objections?
Before you do that, though, could we talk about performance measures?
Oh, okay. I was going to make a pass that a little bit.
I'm sorry. You're right. I thought you were moving the whole bill.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Moving the budget section. So I'm going to just continue and finish that. All right. So moved. Deborah, will you talk about the on the performance measures?
Yes. The performance measures, again, are in a one-page summary. These are the measures that Mr. McTeague talked to you about yesterday. And although there was some discussion around the targets for the performance measure and customer service, I left the numbers here as the agency proposed them. If you, again, like to make changes to these targets, this is the opportunity to do that. I have added the board best practices measure that we talked about with the Board of Clinical Social Workers. I would like to point out that two of the measures, as Mr. McTeague talked about, have new wording changes and have primarily changing performance number four to a more positive measure as opposed to a negative measure. Our recommendation is to approve the agency's measure with the best practices measure, and as I said, could make any changes the subcommittee would like to make.
Any questions or comments on the LFO recommendation on the performance measures? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the item number two, and these are the recommendations from the board, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That one appears to be a bit ambitious to me. Although their experience, of course, may mean that this is right on. I simply note that I wonder about that, and I certainly trust the board not to make decisions aimed at meeting that performance measure unless the actual circumstances of the case indicate that.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Further discussion or any comments or questions?
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendation to the agency performance measures and that the performance measures join the budget bill and the fee bill with a DPAS recommendation to the full committee.
Representative Morgan has moved that the LFO recommendations for the performance measures be added with the budget bill and the fee bill. Is there any discussion? Senator Morse.
And I don't want to belabor this, but the performance measurement file, I question whether, in fact, that was a performance measurement that was directly influenced by the agency. And performance measure number six, the bar appears to be rather lower. I just raise these issues. I'm going to let this go, but what do you want me to define as a performance measure?
I can have discussions if the subcommittee discussed that and incorporate Senator Morse's comments into the recommendation on performance measures.
Did you have
Mr. Chair, members, I can incorporate Senator Morse's comment into the LFO recommendation to the form that goes to full committee so that the agency has it on record, and perhaps if they can put it in the interim and work to make improvements in that area.
Without objection. Okay. Thank you, Senator Morse. So we have the motion, and there were no objections.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to say, so moved. Now we need carriers. And Representative Jensen, would you carry the bill for the House? House Bill, House Bill 5008, the fee bill plus the 5007 budget bill.
Get you for this one.
Does that mean yes? All right, thank you, Representative Jensen. And Senator Starr, would you carry?
I'm not on full.
Oh, you're not on full? Oh.
No, okay. You're on full.
Oh, okay. Representative Jensen, will you also carry to the full Ways and Means Committee? Thank you very much.
Senator, I would carry it on the Senate floor, absolutely.
Thank you very much.
You're done.
I think we're done. Well, thank you very much.
Instructions from LFO.
Right.
Hmm?
Yep.
Parting words.
What's parting words.
Reminder.
Yeah. One go. Work session on 08 and 5007 now closed. I turn over to Deborah.
And thank you for that reminder. What's scheduled for tomorrow in here? We had scheduled Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. And I was notified today by the agency that they're not able to make that presentation. So we'll just be hearing from the Board of Psychiatric Examiners and do a work session on... No, I'm sorry. We won't be doing work sessions. What's tomorrow?
Tomorrow is Wednesday.
All right. So we're just going to do a public hearing on psychiatric examiners.
Psychologist examiners, perhaps?
Sure. Why not?
Thank you.
Right, them too. Yes. Sorry, Deborah Orman and the Board of Psychiatric Examiners, Psychologist Examiners. I only have 20 of these, and you expect me to keep their names straight? Come on. I barely got the bill numbers right this time. There's a performance measure for you. All right, so it'll be a boring day for
you. All right, no, it's not going to be boring. Psychologist examiners, I can't talk either.
Before you gavel out, I would just like to extend the committee's congratulations on passing out your first budget bills.
Well, thank you very much, and look forward to passing out many more budget bills. So, with that, we're adjourned.